Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Friday. I think it's the 8th of October. I've lost track of time, folks, since I've been out in L.A. I've just lost track of time. I don't know when it is. I don't know where I am. And I'm always 2 hours behind Chicago. So, like, the whole world of Chicago is doing its thing, and I'm still, like, waking up. But I got very happy and very pleased that my dear friends from the show are sticking with me. And so speaking of which, I will now ask my distinguished guest to introduce herself because it's a very recognizable dear friend. Take it away, distinguished guest.
I'm Ramana Hussein. I'm an assistant metro editor at the Chicago Sun-Times.
Yes, and a columnist as well. And a very opinionated woman who comes on our show every other week and speaks from her heart and her mind. So, Ramana, welcome back. All right. You were the one who told me about this. I've been waiting almost 2 weeks to talk to you about this. It's a story outside of Chicago that broke on the internet, and it was the talk of the Twitter world, which, of course, I don't follow, but Ramana clues me in on it. And Ellen Pompeo, an actress I never heard of, was so disrespectful to my favorite, well, actually tied for first favorite actor of all time, the great Denzel Washington, tied with Paul Newman. Showing my age here, most of my listeners don't even know who the hell Paul Newman is. But Ramon, I gotta tell you, I loved Paul Newman in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So Denzel, you're tied with Paul Newman. But why don't you explain to people what Ellen Pompeo had to say about Denzel Washington and how disrespectful it was? Take it away, Ramon.
Well, I have to first of all tell you that so Ellen Pompeo is on the show called Grey's Anatomy, a show I really don't watch, but at some point it was really popular. I would say the mid-2000s, and a lot of my friends would watch it. And apparently it's still running, and people say it's not as good. Sandra Oh was on it. Sandra Oh has obviously starred in many things, but that was something that kind of gave her more of a presence. So a friend of mine was telling me about how some character returned, or we're on this like group text message. And I noticed that Ellen Pompeo and Denzel Washington were both trending on Twitter a couple days ago. And I was like, what's this about? And then I saw that Ellen Pompeo was, so she's an actress on Grey's Anatomy, and she's actually the lead character in the show. And she was talking about this incident where Denzel Washington, I believe, was directing an episode. And I think Denzel Washington and her had some sort of creative difference. And Denzel Washington said something to her. And then they got into some heated exchange. And she started swearing at Denzel Washington and said, "Hey, it's my effing show. You don't even know where the bathroom is." And so a lot of people were dragging her on Twitter for going after Denzel Washington. And you know, the thing is, I was telling my friends, like, I could understand if you have a difference of opinion in a workplace with someone, and, you know, things can get heated, but I felt like the way she said it was pretty disrespectful. And I don't know what Denzel Washington's side was. That was what my takeaway is, because she was telling everybody what happened. And so she was talking about how she was mad at Denzel the whole day. And it was kind of funny, because I think she was trying to show, like, you know, what a tough boss lady she was. And then it kind of backfired on her. And everybody's like, why are you bragging about that? It makes you look like a fool. And, you know, obviously people were taking, you know, shots at her because she's not an A-list actor like Denzel Washington. And Denzel Washington's on this totally different level. And then, you know, obviously people were bringing up race, because she's a white woman and Denzel Washington is black, so as we all know. So it was pretty interesting. And then a couple of days ago, I think Katie Couric is now being called a Karen as well, because she talked about how, I think she had a book that came out, and she talked about how Denzel Washington made her quote unquote uncomfortable. I have to admit, I haven't really read that much about the Katie Couric episode, but everybody started talking about Katie Couric a couple of days ago. I didn't have time to pay attention to that, as I was pretty busy the last couple of weeks, really pretty busy with work. So that was the takeaway with Ellen Pompeo / Denzel Washington episode.
All right. Well, now you got me at a tangent, but Katie Couric got ripped in the Bright One, the Sun-Times the other day by S.E. Cupp. I don't know if you saw that column. I have a confession to make. S.E. Cupp is quickly becoming one of my favorite columnists.
I know. And, you always tell me to read her.
Yeah, I'm like, did you read her? And this is a woman who's a conservative, ladies and gentlemen. But she has, she just lost her, affinity for conservative politics because of Trump. And so she's still not a liberal by any stretch of the imagination. She's still on the right of me in every single issue, political issue. But I respect conservatives, my lefty listeners give me a hard time about this, who defy Trump on the principle that he's a tyrant, and that he's a lying and very dangerous to our country presence. So anyway, S.E. Cupp has taken that stand. And so a lot of times I'll be reading her and I'll go, I disagree with her on this line, but I like this line, which is a provocative columnist. I enjoy that. You know what I mean? In a provocative, she took Katie Couric to task because Katie Couric wrote this book where she was bragging about how nasty and mean she is to people, how she undercut other women. So follow me in this, Romana. Like, Katie Couric was bright. So let's say you've been at the Sun-Times for, I don't know how many years, 10 years or
20,
whatever it is.
20.
Get out of here. You've been at the Bright One for 20?
Yeah, right after 9/11. I got hired in October.
Damn, it's been 20. Man, they got to give you a watch or something. I don't know.
They stopped doing that. Like, in my first 5 years, at the time Marshall Field still existed, I got a Marshall Field gift card. And then after that, it was just like nothing. You know, it was just kind of like they ran out of money to give anybody. So,
you know what? I'll give you I'll tell you a similar story about my 20th year. It was my 20th year anniversary at the Reader. Occurred right in the middle of one of our many ownership changes during that really dark era after the original owners sold the Reader. And then the company that bought the Reader went bankrupt, and then it was taken over by a hedge fund, and the hedge fund brought in some managers from, I don't even remember where they were from, and all of a sudden, it's so weird, Romana, all of a sudden there were these managers that were brought in as consultants running the Reader, and they gathered all the Reader employees in a room for some reason. And it was then that they announced, they were like listing the older employees in the room stand up just so you could see, everybody could see everybody. And they go, oh my God, this guy, Ben, has been with us for 20 years. This is how that I was recognized for 20 years in the middle of a meeting with the consultants of the hedge fund that took us in a bankruptcy proceeding. Dark times in journalism, Ron. Anyway, 20 years you've been at the Sun. Okay, so going back to my story. If you acted the way Katie Couric acts, according to S.E. Cupp, anytime a young woman came to the Sun-Times, you would openly attempt to undercut her because you would fear that she would represent a competition to you and that your status would somehow be endangered by her presence. I've known you for really 2 years, 3 years, four, whatever it is. That's just, there's nothing like that in your soul. But have you ever like encountered someone that you thought was so paranoid about her position in the universe that she was undercutting you?
Sometimes. I mean, it happens to any, you know, younger, I mean, I'm not young anymore, but any younger woman who's, especially a person of color, I think, in the newsroom. But I don't know, I have never had a blatantly done. I have to say I'm pretty lucky, but there's definitely some people who feel paranoid. Like, you know, they have to be the one woman, you know, that everybody listens to. And, you know, you kind of get lectured on by some people, but I've never had anything like blatant happen to me. But there's definitely, I think, there's a stereotype that female bosses are, you know, extra, and that's sexist, I think, because there are bad male bosses and there's bad female bosses. But, and I think what happens with a lot of women bosses is they feel like they have to be like men and, you know, do the stereotypical or act the stereotypical way men act, or have to be a lot tougher. So I think that's what happens, especially with the older generation. What I've seen is like, they have to feel like they have to be a lot tougher, and they probably have to deal with a lot more too. So I have seen it, and I have seen some people like, you know, and sometimes I wonder if I do that because, you know, there's a lot of young journalists now, and I'm one of the older people now. And so, you know, we have a lot of these younger journalists who don't have that much experience. And sometimes I'll be like, oh, these millennials, you know, and it's like, don't they know that this is how you do things, X, Y, and Z. So I'm sure I can come off like that too. But I try to remember that, okay, these individuals are all in their 20s and they have less experience than I do. And some things that are instinctive to me might not be instinctive to them. But then of course I start thinking to myself and go, God, when I was that age, I knew that, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just like sometimes it's a generational thing too, but I don't think I'm overly, I think in general, people think I'm pretty harmless from what I can gather from the newsroom. I mean, a lot of younger reporters do come to me if they have a question or need advice. So I'd like to think that I'm not a total jerk.
All right, we went off astray there. I allowed myself to go down that path. Let's go back to Ellen Pompeo.
Yeah.
Because the Katie Couric thing was completely different. But I don't know, maybe I'm being too deferential. You tell me. But to me, a man like Denzel Washington, just by virtue of his longevity, his track record, his success, his greatness, which I do believe he's a great actor.
He's a great actor. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. There's like certain actors where you're just like, no question, he's one of them.
Yeah, just commands respect. And so I can't imagine, like, if Denzel Washington, if I were, just imagine this, Romano, you and I were in a movie and Denzel was the director. I can't in a million years imagine being anything but respectful of the guy. It's Denzel freaking Washington.
I think Ellen Pompeo was just trying to, show like, hey, look, I'm this tough, like, you know, we hear a lot of white women call themselves boss lady. Sorry, I know there's a lot of women that I know. And so a lot of like women of color always laugh at white women who always like brag about how bossy they are. And they're like, they call themselves boss lady. So I think she was trying to show like, oh God, look, I'm such a boss lady. Like, you know, even telling Denzel Washington where he can go. Like, I'm like, and so it just, I think the tone of it came wrong. And then like, I was telling a friend, I go, I don't care if she like called him out on something. I mean, yeah, I would be respectful to Denzel Washington too. I'd be respectful to, even if it wasn't someone that was Denzel Washington, like, you know, obviously, like, I guess it's human nature. When we see Denzel Washington, we're all going to be like, but in general, I think you should treat everyone with respect. So I think if I had a difference of opinion with someone, and it was someone of the stature of Denzel Washington, I might get mad, but I wouldn't say things like, hey, it's my show. You don't even know where the bathroom is. That's just another level. And it's one of the things I always tell people is like, you can tell someone's character by the way they treat someone at a restaurant, the waiter or the servers. And it's like if they treat them like crap, it's like that's how they treat people. unless they can do something for them. So I think that he should treat, like, you know, the, you know, somebody who's, you know, the director, or not the director, but somebody who's just doing like catering in, you know, for the show, the same way she would respect someone else. So for her to like brag about saying that to Denzel Washington, it's like, you shouldn't even say that to like the average person, let alone, I guess, everybody's saying Denzel Washington, because, you know, everybody's pointing out like, who are you? And people don't even know who you are. Like, I know who she is because a lot of women would watch Grey's Anatomy and they would talk about it. So that's how I knew who she was. And for a moment, she was in the news a lot. You would see pictures of her, like if you read any celebrity magazines. The show's not as popular as it was, but so, you know, for her to go on this podcast and brag about it, people are just like, nothing to brag about, lady, you know? So yeah, you're hearing the Karen jokes for sure about her.
All right. So as long as we're in a topic of women behaving badly, let's move on to Sage Steele. And I was the one who told you about her.
I knew who she was. I just didn't know her latest.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I knew you knew who she was. You just didn't know about her latest. She went on the Jay Cutler podcast. Yes, it's true. Jay Cutler, the former Bear quarterback, has his own podcast. And Jay Cutler is MAGA. He's all about showing his MAGA love and affinities. And apparently Sage Steele, who is, again, a broadcaster on ESPN, is also MAGA. She said some things that were pretty freaking stupid. In my humble opinion, this is me speaking, okay, on my podcast. So she said them on the issues of my obsession at the moment, vaccines. And she said it on the issue of women on the workplace just dealing with blatant sexual harassment. And then she insulted, for a good measure, Barack Obama's father and Barack Obama. And it was pretty much a trifecta for Sage Steele on the, and Jay Cutler was just like nodding his head going, yeah, sounds good to me. Glad you're saying it. So why don't you take the deep dive a little bit, Romana, on Sage Steelgate.
First of all, I had no idea Jay Cutler had a podcast, but I guess he made billions of dollars, so he doesn't have to do anything for the rest of his life, and I guess he does the podcast for fun. I knew who Sage Steele was. I know that you told me the latest on her, but I remember the reason I found out about who she was is because she made comments that were crazy before too. And I agree with you. I think her comments were way off base. Her first comment was about vaccines. And she said, basically, she goes, I don't care if people, you know, if people have a right to get vaccinated, but she said something like vaccine mandates are insane or they're crazy. And she was just going off on vaccine mandates. And I guess Jay Cutler was shaking his dumb head. And then she said, you know, she brought up Barack Obama and how he identifies as a black man. And she was going off on, you know, by identifying as a black man, I think she was saying, you know, he's dismissing his mother and grandmother and grandparents who raised him while his, you know, black father was off, you know, in Africa, not taking care of him. So I think she was telling Barack, you know, she was kind of going after Barack Obama and his father. And and we all know, you know, everybody knows that Barack Obama is biracial, and I'm not black, so I'm not one to talk about how a biracial individual who's part black should identify. So I don't have a right to say how anybody should describe themselves who are black. So, but I just thought it was interesting that she's going after Barack Obama because he said he's black. I mean, if he chooses to say he's black, what's wrong with that? He's not denied that his mother and grandparents took care of him. He's talked about it extensively. And, you know, he's even talked about how his father wasn't in his life that much, but that was his father. And at the end of the day, I think a lot of black people would say, you know, when he walks down the street, nobody's going to mistake Barack Obama for a white man. And so he's lived his life as a black man. So he identifies as a black man. And I don't think he disparages his, you know, white heritage is at all. In fact, I think he's gone out of his way to talk about his mother and grandparents. And then the third thing she was talking about was sexual harassment. And then she talked, then she kind of went after women when she was talking about sexual harassment at the workplace. And she's like, well, you know, these young women asked me to look at their tapes of their, you know, of their stand-ups. I guess that's what it's called in TV sports or TV news. And she said, well, look at the stuff they're wearing. And I don't know. And then she, you know, she's kind of starts blaming women. It sounded like she was blaming women for the sexual harassment. So so of course I did see Sage Steele trending on Twitter. And then I thought like, oh God, what did she say? And I was just been so busy the last couple of weeks. I didn't really pay attention, but you made me do my homework and look it up. So I do agree with you. I don't agree with any of her commentary on those three topics at all.
I there's certain things that really trigger me, to use a millennial word, if I may. And one thing that really triggers me is one of the three things. I mean, I found everything she said upsetting. Like the part about the women was sort of like heading into that part of discourse where women are supposed to just put up with harassment and assault, that idea. Well, yeah, you just get over it. It'll be over. And so she was talking about how in a locker room when she was interviewing men and they'll say provocative, nasty things to her that they shouldn't say. And she just kind of rolls her eyes and goes on with it. And that was her advice. And so whether the nasty things that the men say to her really affect her, I don't know. She makes it seem like they don't. But I don't know how that's good advice to tell people just to tolerate abuse. I've never liked that advice in the first place. And I know I wouldn't want to be abused. So why should we put up with it? That makes it seem like there's nothing wrong with being abused. So a very bizarre message for her to put out, and I'm not even sure she believes it. But the part that triggered me the most, I suppose, well, it ties together with Obama. So Obama has chosen to indicate, apparently, on census forms he's black. Okay, that's his identity. That's his choice. All right? She, Sage Steele, has chosen not to get the COVID. The vaccine, I mean, she does have COVID, actually, but not yeah. The vaccine. She got COVID right right after that. So I don't get it. She is mad because people like me have no tolerance for her not getting the vaccine, but she shows nothing but contempt for Barack Obama choosing to identify as a black man. So this is my problem with MAGA in general, Romana.
It's a hypocrisy. Yeah.
They want us to tolerate their idiocy all the time. And go, oh, that's right, MAGA. You're right. You know, you're so smart, MAGA. But they feel free to just mock us, make fun of us.
And the worst part is that they take language from the left and apply it to their feelings, where they talk about my body, my choice. But the thing with this case is that's a fallacy. This isn't just your body. It's everybody else's body that you're, you know, in the vicinity of. So when you sneeze or cough and you have COVID, you could give it to someone else. So for them to say my body, my choice, or I don't want to wear a mask, it's like, no, it isn't just your body, because you could be affecting someone else. So it's just hypocrisy. I mean, you know, a lot of MAGA people, they talk about, you know, religion, and you know, they're always like, when it's someone else's religion that's not Jewish, maybe Christian, you know, they're a little okay with Judaism, I think. But if there's a religion that has nothing that they're familiar with, they're like, there's always a separation of church and state in this country. But then when it comes to Christianity, they want that weaved into the law of America. And, you know, then they're like, well, this is the Christian American way we do things. So it's just hypocrisy. You know what I mean? It's like, they talk about like religious extremists or extremists overseas, and then it's like they don't look at themselves, and they're like, we're American. You know, they don't realize that they're acting, behaving the same way they criticize other people for doing all around the world for their narrow-mindedness. So I just think it's hypocrisy, plain and simple.
Absolutely. All right. Now, I may have asked you this question already. I can't remember. So, I am going to ask it again, and I'm going to use your counsel as I go forth in the world. I have issues, I openly admit it, with vaccine anti-vaxxers, and now we're supposed to call some of them, what are they, hesitant? Is it like a distinguish between anti-vaxxers? I'm like, okay, so that already, man, you MAGA people, you guys are unreal. You could rip anybody and then you call them a snowflake, but we have to get the exact right terminology when we talk about so we're not anti-vax, Ben, we're hesitant, or I forget their little word they have for it. I got a problem, and so you can feel free to make fun of me for this one, Romana, with people who express tolerance for anti-vaxxers. And this is a group of people that exist in the world of sports. And as you know, I'm obsessed with basketball, and the basketball season has started, preseason. I've been watching a lot of it, and they go to the studio shows. And one of the big topics of conversation in the studio show is a great guard who plays for the Brooklyn Nets named Kyrie Irving, who is refusing to take the shot. And as a result, will not be able to play in at least half of his team's games, because in New York City, he plays for the Brooklyn Nets. In New York City, you cannot go into the playing arena, Barclays Center, where the Nets play, unless you're vaccinated. And that includes the players. So that's 41 games. That's half a season he can't play. And the Nets don't know what to do. And he's sticking to his guns. He says he's not getting vaccinated. And so when they go to the studio and they have these talking heads who are many of them are former basketball players, and I don't know if they're chicken. I don't know if it's a code. I don't know whatever, but maybe they think this is being open-minded. They feel compelled to say, well, I respect his right to have his opinion. And the man is entitled to his view, and we should not try to impose ourselves. I'm like, what are you talking about? I get even madder at them than Kyrie Irving, you know? And I started babbling about it to my son-in-law. I was always, Brian, can you believe this guy?
Go ahead.
Your reaction.
I think a lot of people are sensitive because when, there's the African-American community, I don't know what the percentage is, but there has been some hesitancy because of the past, right? So a lot of people feel sensitive about, should we say something? Should we not say something? I think it's okay to criticize people who don't want to get the vaccine personally, because it does affect other people. And I saw a pretty funny tweet by a Black person that said, listen, if white people are going to your neighborhood to get the shot, it can't be bad. So I thought that was pretty funny. I think it's okay to criticize. I mean, when you criticize, that doesn't mean you're going to go and beat someone up for not getting the vaccine, but it's okay to sit there and express your opinion and say, this is why it's wrong for someone not to get the vaccine. Because I was reading an article that said that the entire world has to be on board for us to get over this thing, because the coronavirus is always going to exist. The question is how many people are going to die from coronavirus. And they said if the entire world is not vaccinated, our world has shrunk so much compared to even 30, 40 years ago. I mean, people are traveling all the time. I have relatives overseas. I hope to see them someday. So it's like we're going to be exposed to everybody across the world. And it makes me personally angry that there's people literally dying for the vaccine around the world. And we as Americans are hesitating to get the shot. We're so privileged. It's like you have to bribe Americans. You have to give them food. You have to give them pizza. You have to give them marijuana. You have to give them beer. And it's like, seriously, we're that entitled of a country? That makes me mad as someone who's been to other places in the world where they don't have this kind of access to shots. They don't cost anything. I mean, where my relatives live in India, there's no refrigeration. I mean, there's refrigerators, but they don't have the kind of refrigeration systems we have here, and the electricity goes off. So a lot of people are getting shots, but they're old vaccines, and people are getting sick from that. And it's like, here we have Americans, and I just feel like Americans can be so selfish sometimes and just think, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? And so I think it's okay to criticize people. I'm not saying you have to be mean and nasty to them, but I think it's okay to say hey, this is why we need to get vaccinated. And I know who Kyrie Irving is, because I think he converted to Islam. I don't know if he still is, but he was fasting 1 year. And so I was telling Mick about it, and then he's like, oh, yeah, he said stuff about the world being flat or something. So, okay. But I heard he's a pretty good player, right? So I guess that's why people are curious or are just kind of concerned. But I think the NBA did the right thing. They tend to, as according to Mick Dumke, my husband, he said that they're probably the most progressive of all of the sports leagues, that, you know, compared to the NFL and the MLB. So I think it's okay. I mean, if you're playing basketball, you're pretty close contact. I mean, they're not wearing masks while they're playing, right? Because that would be crazy. It'd be impossible to play the way these guys play. So you can't have someone unvaccinated on the basketball court in close proximity to everyone, breathing and coughing and, you know, talking, and, you know, it just would be dangerous. And, you know, even though like these other players are vaccinated, you don't know how they're going to respond to it, because people can still, you can still get coronavirus after you're vaccinated. What medical experts have said is that the chances of you dying are very slim, but you can still get really sick. So it's like, you don't want to put other players in jeopardy and have them not play because this one person doesn't want to get the shot. So I think it's okay to criticize. Yeah, of course you don't want to be mean and nasty, but like Ellen Pompeo, but you still can criticize. I think it's fine. And I think it's fine to call them anti-vaxxers. I don't think I have to use soft language for that.
Oh my God. No, I know. It's ridiculous after a while. And, this is one of my favorite topics, the NBA and the vaccine. And so I'll just point this out. The NBA has a very curious double standard. So I think everybody in the NBA has to be vaccinated to go to a game. The people who are to keep score, the trainers, the coaches, and the referees have to be vaccinated. The players don't have to be vaccinated. And that has become a collective bargaining issue between the Association of Players and the NBA. And so what the NBA and the leaders of the NBA union have decided is to effectively make it very unattractive not to get the vaccine, without mandating it, but making it very unattractive. For instance, you can't, I think this is the case, Ramona. You cannot sit, if you're not vaccinated, you can't sit in the same part of the locker room with vaccinated players. You have, you know, like your separate quarters.
Yeah.
And in a way, they're basically making them pariahs. And Mick is absolutely correct. The vast majority, and this is really important that I do that, the vast majority of NBA players are vaccinated. I think it's down to like literally a handful, maybe like five players who are not vaccinated. But the most best known is Kyrie Irving of Mr. The Earth is Flat fame. And so I just have found that very interesting that the players were given this special exemption. I'm for a mandate. I've come that far. I'm for a mandate. Mandates work. This is a public health crisis. I don't see it as a civil liberties issue. I'm really just shake my head in disbelief at people who proclaim it as a civil liberties issue, because they were nowhere to be found when there were legitimate civil liberties issues where people got thrown into jail because of their political beliefs. You know, the four MAGA's heirs did not protest the shooting of Fred Hampton. I mean, I could just go on and on about civil liberties violations in this country that MAGA never said boo about. And
they never said anything about the Patriot Act or any others. You know, that's what I'm saying. It's funny. It's like other people's civil liberties, you know, basically it's people who don't look like you, right? Their civil liberties don't matter, but mine do. And this is my body. That's a thing that bothers me. It isn't just your body. If it was just your body, that's fine, but it's other people's bodies. And sadly, we had a family friend, who lived in Florida, and he was 48 years old. This is someone that I grew up with, and I guess he wasn't vaccinated, and he just passed away on Sunday. And my friends and I, we haven't seen him in years, and we were all talking about it, and we were just like, it's like part of us is angry that he didn't get the shot. He has four daughters, 17 and under, and you know, he left a wife, and his parents are devastated. And it's like, his wife was saying that he wanted to do more research. And we're like, research, what research? And it's devastating. And I think a lot of nurses and doctors are saying that when people are hospitalized and they are close to dying, they ask things like, can I get the shot now? And it's too late. And so I'm seeing this. This is like something that's affected me personally. And I just, you know, everybody know, like 99.9% of the people I know, he was probably the one person that I know that, you know, in our Indian community, somebody I grew up with, and I had, like I said, he lives in Florida, is vaccinated. And I'm just perplexed. And look what happened. You know, he was 48 years old. He wasn't like a senior citizen. And so it's a devastating thing. And so if you can do, you know, nobody knows what can happen to anyone with this virus, because we all know this is something new. But it's like, if you can take the precaution that you can, why not do it? The shots are free. And it's like, at this point, it's not even like, you know, like a couple months ago, we're all like dying for the shot because it was impossible to get. Like, you know, we're like going on the internet and people were having a hard time, you know, going, you know, finding these different like, you know, pharmacies where they could get it. Now it's like, you can just walk up and get it anywhere. I went to go speak to a class at Columbia College last week, and I walk in and they were basically like, they thought I was there to get a shot. And I go, no, I'm here to speak. But they had shots there. So it's like everywhere you go and there's no line. So there's just no excuse, I think, at this point. And, you know, if you don't get it done, it's like it can be devastating, not just to you, but it affects other people and your loved ones.
Yeah, no, it's a very bizarre country, divided country. When you said that we were desperately trying to get the shot, you're talking about the people like within our little universe, which obviously is what we know, you know, outside our little universe. And that's one thing I've really learned now. It takes a while for me to learn something, but when I learn it, I learn it. Our country, this is so obvious what I'm about to say, is really polarized. And it's a very, and you're right, a very spoiled country, absolutely spoiled country that people could just say, I don't want this vaccine. If it's going to endanger everybody else, I have a right not to take this back. And an entire political party is dedicated to this worldview. The Republican Party is dedicated to this. Ramona, it blows my mind. You cannot be a Republican and say, yes, you have to take the vaccine. If you compliment the vaccine, if you say like Lindsey Graham, the right-wing Republican senator from South Carolina, in a speech the other day, made some reference to the vaccine, like it's a health, good thing you should take. And people booed him, you know, and then immediately, I'm not saying you have to take it. And they're like, you know, you guys, first of all, you're biggest bunch of wimps I've ever seen. I must tolerate your view on the vaccine. No, I don't have to tolerate your view. Anyway. All right, let's move on.
The crazy thing is that their grand pooba, Donald Trump, got COVID and he got the vaccine. It's like, this is your boy and he got the vaccine and you don't want to listen to him? Okay.
Yeah. They booed him and he backed off too. He gave a speech. They booed him. Hold on, wait. I'm not saying you got to take it. Hold on. You guys are such cowards. And by the way, NBA players, you don't, come on. You could tell Kyrie Irving he's acting like a fool. You could say it. Not going to kill you. All right, sorry, I'm going to stop and get off on my... all right, let's close with Ramona's recommendations. Ramona's all over a certain TV show that's the hottest show in the world, and she's making fun of me because she knows I probably won't like it. So take it away, Ramona.
Yeah, I'm going to... So I'm still watching Ted Lasso with Mick, and I know I've talked about it. You should definitely watch it. I think you'll like it. And it's only two seasons. The show that I binged this week was Squid Game. It's a Korean, I guess I would say South Korean drama. And it's based on, centered on capitalism. I should tell you that. And one of the things that people are talking about, a lot of Korean people who speak Korean are saying that the subtitles don't even give it justice. They're like, there's a lot of things that if you don't speak the language, they're going to just go over your head and you won't really understand how they're really taking a shot at capitalism. So I kind of am sad about that. But the one thing that's kind of cool is there's a South Asian character in there. South Asian Muslim character in there. So he speaks Urdu. So whenever he speaks Urdu, I don't have to read the subtitles. He only speaks it a couple of times. He actually speaks Korean. He's a character that a lot of people ended up liking. So the show's about this game. It's a twisted game where a lot of people who are down on their luck and don't have any money go play. And the game is you go and you play it, and people die while they play this game. And the reason I was making fun of you is because there's a very similar themed show that was Japanese, I believe. It was called Alice in Borderland, which I recommended on this show. And it was very similar, except in the fact that the world kind of just, you know, ends as we know it. And all of a sudden, people have to play these games. So a lot of people are talking about the similarities. And they're like, how come Alice in Borderland didn't get the same love? And I remember you told me you watched one episode and then you kind of gave up. You liked it when it was all fun and sunny, and then when the apocalypse came, you're like, I don't want to watch this show anymore. But Alice in Borderland, I thought was really cool. It was a cool show, and I think you would like Squid Game. It's only 9 episodes. They're about an hour long. I think episode 8 was about a half an hour, but I definitely would recommend it. And apparently it's like the number one show on Netflix, and I've seen like articles about it, like left and right. And I think you would enjoy it. It's definitely,
all right, I'm gonna give it a shot.
It's definitely, you know, morbid and a little like, you know, crazy. But I think we will lose a little in terms of understanding like how it's criticizing capitalism. But in general, I did enjoy it. I liked a lot of the characters as well.
Well, I will definitely watch it. It's on Netflix, so I can watch it. And we have a lot of downtime here in Los Angeles because we spend most of our time just hanging around with our granddaughter. And so I will watch it, give it a shot. Maybe I'll like it more than the other show. But now, I have to tell you that my love for Ryan Murphy's Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky saga grows immensely with each episode. And I know you're going to hold off until the whole thing's dropped so you can watch it. I urge you to watch it because I would love to do the deep dive with you on it.
Is it on Netflix?
Is it on? No, it's on Hulu. I want to say.
I can watch it.
Maybe on Hulu. Yeah, you can watch it.
Maybe I'll start watching it next week because I'm not watching a show right now. I binge on my own shows without Mick. So that could be I could start it next week.
I just urge you to watch it. I would love to get your opinions about it and your thoughts on it. Last night's episode, really, they're now at the point in the show, and I don't know if you remember the details of the Clinton impeachment saga, but there's so many parallels to today with how Republicans play the game of politics, how Democrats play the game of politics, the deceit of the Clintons, and just sort of the seat of individual characters is so fascinating. The star of the show is Sarah Paulson, in my humble opinion, who plays Linda Tripp.
Ryan Murphy loves Sarah Paulson, by the way. She's like in a lot of his shows.
And he should, because she's brilliant. Every time I see her in a Ryan Murphy show, I'm like applauding her. She was so good as Marsha Clark in the O.J. Simpson show. She was so good. This wasn't a Ryan Murphy show, but she was so good as the composite character in Miss America, the show about the ERA. She was excellent in anything she does, I feel. And she just brings Linda Tripp, the treachery and weirdness of Linda Tripp to life. And the way Linda Tripp entraps Monica Lewinsky is really upsetting on one level, but absolutely fascinating on another level, and how that leads to the impeachment of a president and how that has consequences for our country. Because I do believe that George Bush defeated Al Gore to a certain degree because Americans were just tired of Bill Clinton, so they blamed Gore. And so I urge you to watch it. I urge everybody to watch it because you can learn a lot about history. You can learn about politics from watching it as well. So it's one of those weird shows, Romano, I feel like, where not only are we entertained, but you also get a sense of what politics are like in this country. So that's your assignment. I'm going to watch Squid Game, dutifully watch it, and maybe I'll like it. And I'll report back and I go, I was wrong about Alice. I'm right. You were right about Squid Game.
Yeah. We'll see. But I think you'll like it. I think if you gave Alice in Borderland a chance, I think you would have liked it too.
Probably. It could have been just a moment in time. Romana, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. As always, there was a whole bunch of other things we were going to talk about, but we had so much fun taking a deep dive into Sage Steele and Ellen Pompeo and Kyrie Irving, and we didn't get there, so we'll get there next time. So stay safe and sound, okay, Romana?
No worries. You take care, too.
All right, that's Romana Hussein. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.